Rep Boone was in my office this morning, too.
Great. Open up the House Committee on Human Services. Representative Maurer barely made it with the skin of his teeth. Okay. Colleagues, we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2135. So, Katie, do you want to read what there is to read about House Bill 2135?
House Bill 2135 requires that rental agreements in the state of Oregon indicate whether smoking is prohibited, allowed, or allowed only in specific areas on the premises. And where smoking is allowed, the bill in its current form would require rental agreements to warn of the possible exposure to secondhand smoke.
Great. Thank you so much. So I think we have a series of people who are wanting to speak on this bill. Should we bring them up in the order in which this has been printed up? So Katrina Hedberg, Jim Beecraft, Mo Spencer. Oh, no, I've got the wrong one. I'm sorry. Katrina Hedberg,
sorry.
Colleen Herman-Franzen, and Rebecca Geary. Sorry.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Back in the old days, that would have been known as 1243.
And what does that mean?
Disregard previous message.
<I'll probably laughs>
That's Katrina. I think she will.
Sorry.
Is there three?
See, another thing I
thought.
Three.
Sorry, Katrina.
Piece of the
You're right.
Okay. If you would announce who you are, that would be terrific.
I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the interim state epidemiologist with the Oregon Public Health Division.
Katrina, before you continue, I'm going to ask people to turn off your cell phones, your Blackberries, your Blueberries, Raspberries, anything that has any kind of electronics, because it affects the sound system. And it isn't enough just to turn it on mute or vibrate. It has to be turned off completely. Thank you so much. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg, the interim state epidemiologist, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 2135, which requires all landlords to disclose the smoking status of rental property as a standard part of the rental agreement. This bill was pre-session filed by the governor on behalf of DHS. Exposure to secondhand smoke is a serious health hazard, causing 800 deaths in Oregon annually. Harmful health outcomes of secondhand smoke include lung cancer, heart disease, respiratory disease, among others. Even brief exposure to secondhand smoke can trigger an asthma attack. In 2006, the U.S. Surgeon General released, quote, the health consequences of involuntary exposure to tobacco smoke, a report to the Surgeon General, which summarized current scientific data and concluded that there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Multi-unit housing is one of the few remaining indoor places in Oregon where non-smokers are inadvertently exposed to secondhand smoke. Tobacco smoke, quote, has been shown to move through light fixtures, through ceiling crawl spaces, and in and out of doorways, according to the California Division of Occupational Safety and Health. Often people who rent are the very people who may be most vulnerable to the negative health effects of secondhand smoke. These include the elderly, people with chronic health conditions and disabilities, and people with lower incomes. 10% of all Oregon adults report having current asthma. Among those living in a household with an income of less than $15,000, the prevalence is 18%. We're working on many fronts to keep Oregonians healthy. The Public Health Division works with local health departments to conduct outreach to landlords to encourage them to adopt no-smoking rules. Many landlords have voluntarily adopted such rules in order to protect their properties from fire and smoke damage and to provide a cleaner, safer environment for the tenants. Currently, however, landlords in Oregon are not required to inform potential tenants whether or not smoking is allowed in rental housing. If passed, this law would require landlords to disclose the smoking status of multi-unit rental housing and warn renters that they may be exposed to secondhand smoke by renting a unit in a complex where smoking is allowed. This would provide renters with the ability to make informed choices about being exposed to secondhand smoke where they live. According to a survey we conducted in 2008 of Oregon renters, 70% would choose smoke-free housing if it were available, including 38% of renters who smoke. We're aware of proposed amendments to remove language requiring landlords to provide additional information to renters about the dangers of secondhand smoke. The amendments also exempt owner-occupied mobile home units. The department does not object to these amendments. In summary, the Public Health Division supports passage of this bill. Nobody should be exposed to secondhand smoke in their home against their will. I offer myself to members of the committee as a resource for information and technical assistance on secondhand smoke and tobacco-related death and disease in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hedberg. Any questions of this witness? Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, actually,
yes.
I do.
Yes.
I just want to, because I rarely have an opportunity to talk to the epidemiologist.
Take advantage of it while you can.
Your CD summary, which is totally off subject, the CD summary that's published
yes.
is an absolutely awesome document, and I appreciate it. And I want to know who actually writes it.
Chair and Representative Maurer, thank you very much. It is a publication that's written mostly by our office, the Office of Disease Prevention and Epidemiology, but we have a variety of authors, so it is staff who write it, and at this point I'm the ultimate editor.
Because there's a wonderful touch of humor and
there is.
And very pertinent information. That's great. Anyway, thank
yes.
you.
Terrific. Good.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Talented writers.
They're wonderful.
Yes.
Good.
Good morning, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Colleen Herman Franzen, and I'm here today representing the American Lung Association of Oregon. The Lung Association is the oldest voluntary nonprofit health organization in the state. Our mission is to save lives by improving lung health and preventing lung disease. The Lung Association strongly supports this bill for two main reasons. First, it will help renters find healthier, smoke-free housing. And secondly, it will raise awareness of this issue for landlords. The Lung Association provides technical assistance to landlords who are interested in implementing a no-smoking policy. We have spoken with many landlords who did not know that it was legal to adopt this type of policy. Adding a smoking policy disclosure to rental agreements will help raise landlords' awareness about the legality of a no-smoking rule. This disclosure will also encourage more landlords to think about adopting a no-smoking policy, which in turn would protect more renters from secondhand smoke. The Lung Association has received almost 100 calls or emails from renters who are involuntarily exposed to secondhand smoke in their apartments or their rental units. As Katrina mentioned, according to the 2006 Surgeon General's report, there is no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke, and even small amounts can be harmful to people's health. Many renters may not think about secondhand smoke becoming an issue as they sign a rental agreement for a new apartment. Disclosing this information will give renters the information they need to make healthy decisions. Today, I would like to share a few of their stories with you, and then later on, you will be hearing from Rebecca, a renter who is here to share her own story. Passing this bill will help people like Julie, who called the Lung Association looking for help. Julie had asthma and lived in an apartment building in which many of her neighbors smoked. Secondhand smoke is a well-known asthma trigger and was putting her health at risk. This bill would also help people like Mary, a young woman who called the Lung Association looking for a smoke-free apartment. At the time of her call, Mary was 2 months pregnant, and she was very concerned about secondhand smoke harming both herself and her unborn baby. The Lung Association directed her to a listing of smoke-free apartments. However, knowing the building's policy up front could have helped Mary avoid the situation and protect her health. Finally, I want to leave you with the words from an anonymous renter in Portland who emailed the Lung Association to share his experience with smoke drifting into his apartment. The following is a portion of his email, which demonstrates how hard it can be for renters to improve or change their living situations once they are already in them. He writes, "The only way I can continue to breathe is to close my windows in a room without an air conditioner in hot weather. Especially at night, it is bad when the fumes come into my room as my neighbors smoke in their room and their balcony. How can I bring it up to the landlord without losing my lease or getting a rent increase in retaliation? How can I inform my neighbors to stop smoking in their apartments without getting a lawsuit? As these stories indicate, rental homes are one of the few places where Oregonians are still involuntarily exposed to secondhand smoke. Please support House Bill 2135 to help renters find housing that is a healthy choice. So again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you.
Any questions of this witness? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the handout that you passed out, there is a paragraph, the last paragraph on the right column that says there's an increasing legal precedent for clear policies. State courts have ruled against apartment owners who misrepresent smoking policies under legal theories of nuisance, warranty of habitability, and quiet enjoyment. Would you explain that to me, please?
To answer your question, Madam Chair and Representative Van Orman, yes, it is true. We are aware that there are, there have been many court cases in regards to this issue. And this bill would actually protect all landlords, regardless of their policy, against this type of potential liability. So, for example, if a landlord were to allow smoking and they, by having this disclosure in place, they would protect themselves from potential liability, possible lawsuits.
Follow-up? Are you okay there?
I think I understand what you're
okay.
saying.
Madam Chair, I have just...
Representative Olson?
Colleen, you heard a little bit of the testimony that Dr. Hedberg shared and her position for DHS on the amendments. What's your stance on that? Or have you had the opportunity to see any of the amendments?
Right. Representative Olson and Chair, yes, we, the Lung Association, is aware of those amendments. We're supportive of those changes. The true intent of this bill is to provide renters with the information they need to make, to find that healthy housing. So, yes, we're fine with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that the rental agreements are quite varied in terms of how specific they are about where smokers can smoke on the premises. I wonder, could you give us some examples of, do they specify a number of feet away from the properties? And I'm also concerned about people perhaps smoking just outside and the smoke drifting in. Do they specify that kind of thing?
Yes, Representative Dimbro and Chair, to answer your question, it is up to the landlord. They do have the choice to set their own policy. We have encouraged and worked with many landlords to use forms that are available through their landlord associations. I believe you'll be hearing later today from a representative from the Metro Multifamily Housing Association in regards to that issue. But yes, it is up to the landlord to make that decision. Obviously, there's the new state workplace law with the 10-foot rule that would apply to an apartment building if there are employees on site. Personally, when I meet with landlords, we encourage them to adopt either a smoke-free premises policy or at least 25 feet away from the building.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Huff.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. I'm supportive of the idea of having disclosure, and I think it's a great idea so people know what they're up against when they move into an apartment. I'm just curious on how the enforcement's going to work. If you say, okay, it's smoking, everybody understands it's smoking. You say it's non-smoking, and your neighbor has a friend over and they're out on the balcony smoking and you smell it, who do you call?
Good question. We offer that technical assistance to landlords as well, Representative Freeman and Chair Tomei. Enforcement is an issue, and we encourage landlords to treat this rule like any other rule that they already have. So if someone were to violate a noise ordinance, for example, at the property, we encourage them to follow the same procedures, whether that be sending a series of warning letters, having a conversation face-to-face with that renter, offering them cessation resources to, you know, give them the opportunity to quit smoking. There are a variety of ways that to help enforce this issue.
Follow up,
please. Great. I mean, I love that answer. With the exception of currently the way it is, as a voluntary disclosure, the landlord-tenant relationship has the tenant call the landlord when that issue occurs. If we make it a state law, what's the chance of those people calling us because somebody's smoking next door and we have a law that says they're not supposed to? That's my concern.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Representative Freeman. And I think, you know, from my standpoint, we would definitely encourage, you know, renters to, again, talk to their neighbors and talk to their landlord first. So I think a lot of, you know, education is needed, and, you know, our agencies are here to provide that.
Thank you.
You don't want those calls to your office.
Well, I don't want to set an unachievable expectation.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Well, Madam Chair, we could maybe deputize him. I mean,
I don't want to be the smoking police.
Representative Matt. All right, Carolyn. Cowan, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You can call me whatever. I'm a little confused about the reference that two presenters have made to a potential amendment that, of course, we don't have in front of us, because the reference was around amending out a requirement to for landlords to talk about the dangers of exposure to secondhand smoke. And as I'm reading the bill, it simply says warning to the tenant that they may be exposed to secondhand smoke, and those are two different things. Or maybe I heard the reference to the amendments differently, but I'm just curious what we're expecting, if you can. And I know they're not your amendments, so I'm really not asking you to be specific.
I would assume there's somebody here who will be talking about those amendments. Is that true? So shall we wait? Representative Cowan, is that okay with you?
It's okay unless these folks wanted to weigh in on
sure.
it.
Yes, Representative Cohen, I think we will wait. There are other speakers lined up who can speak to that issue more clearly.
Okay.
Representative
Bauer. Madam Chair, I do have a question because I've been trying to look at the law versus the testimony of Dr. Hedberg. And in Dr. Hedberg's testimony, she says that if the law passes this law would require landlords to disclose the smoking status of multi-unit rental housing. And as I read the statute, I don't see that. I've been trying to cross-reference. So my question is, does this only apply to multi-unit housing, or does it apply to, you know, a freestanding home?
Well,
I'm looking at ORS Chapter 90, and ORS Chapter 90 is the entire landlord-tenant law, and it's pages and pages and pages long. So I guess that is a very specific question I have, because my concern is I have one rental home, and you know, I have no problem disclosing that. In fact, I told my renters I don't want them to smoke in the house, and they've respected that. But the point is, I don't want someone to be caught in this trap where they didn't know what the law was, they own one rental home, and they don't make a disclosure and end up getting nailed by the state because they didn't know the law because they have one home. It's not their business. It's just something they have.
Chair Tomei and Representative Maurer, my understanding is that the disclosure would be for rental housing. When we're talking about the health effects of secondhand smoke, of course, rental housing, you could make a determination whether you were going to allow smoking in your rental house or not. Clearly, most people who are renting a house themselves, if they choose to smoke, and it's been disclosed that they're allowed to smoke, then they are making, if you will, a choice, and the people who are there know they're being exposed. So the testimony that I was delivering really had the focus was on multi-unit housing primarily because that is when somebody is inadvertently in their own resident exposed to the smoke of somebody living next door to them. So that's less likely to happen when somebody has a is renting a house themselves because, again, they would know going in or not. So I'm sorry, is that clear? That
follow-up? No, the follow-up. Thank you. You've answered the rationale, but I'm not sure that it says that, and I don't know, and maybe someone can address that when they testify later.
I see somebody standing up, and I'm not sure what that's
about.
And
I see a head nodding.
When they come forward, we'll allow that to
okay.
be answered.
All right. Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you. And I think it's kind of piggybacking on Rep. Maurer's question. If you have a freestanding house, a rental house, and does it apply to someone who may have been in the house, a renter, who smoked and has gone now, and now someone's moving in, does it require the owner to disclose that the previous renter was a smoker because there will still be some smells apparently in the house? Is that, or is it just active smoking? Because it wouldn't be secondhand smoke in the traditional manner.
Madam Chair and Representative Boone, again, my understanding is that what the landlord discloses is that this is a rental unit where we allow smoking, we allow pets or whatever, not necessarily whether all of those habits were practiced by the previous tenant. So, again, my understanding is this is disclosure for the people who are renting to understand what is allowed and not allowed on their property, not necessarily all of the specific details that may have happened. It's just part of the standard agreement.
Okay, we're going to move on. Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Geary. I live at 6407 Southeast 143rd Place in Portland. I am a single woman with 3 grown children, 10 grandchildren, and I'm a nursing student at Mount Hood Community College. I was born and raised here in Portland and have traveled all around the country and out of the country some, but I've chosen to live in the Portland area for most of my life because, in part, of the clean air. I'm here today to voice my support of House Bill 2135. In the fall of 2007, I suddenly found myself single and in need of suitable housing. I found an apartment complex that I liked right across the street from my school and moved in, and it was on the second floor. And about just a few days after I was in, I'd gotten all my things in and got settled. I noticed that there was one bathroom in the apartment that really smelled of cigarette smoke. And I couldn't understand where it was coming from, so I just closed the bathroom off and didn't use it because there were other bathrooms to use. And so it turned out to be coming from the apartment below me where there was a housebound individual who was a chain smoker. And the smoke just rose up through vents or cracks or whatever and permeated the walls and floors and everything in my home. But it was the worst in that one bathroom. So about 2 months after I moved in, I was diagnosed with lung cancer and had extensive surgery to remove one lung and other affected tissues. When it was time for me to go home from the hospital, the first thing I smelled when I walked in the door was cigarette smoke. With greatly decreased lung capacity, I knew I couldn't stay in that place. But I'd signed a 12-month lease. Breathing was hard enough in clean air, let alone trying to breathe in, thank you, in a smoky environment. It just wasn't going to happen. So it only took me a few days to find a friend who would rent me a room in her house where she had no smokers, no pets, no carpets, and no mold. So in the meantime, though, I was incapacitated because I just had a huge surgery, and I had to get my stuff out of that apartment that I had just put it all into 3 months prior. Secondhand smoke has always been very offensive to me. If the representative of the apartment complex had disclosed their smoking policy and I had known there was a smoker living in the apartment right below mine, I would never have considered living there. I would have kept looking for an apartment complex that didn't allow residents to smoke anywhere on the premises. When I went to the apartment manager to tell them about the smoke, she sent the maintenance man over to check and see what the problem was. But he himself must have been a smoker because he reported back to her that there was no smell. So I called the American Lung Association in Oregon to see if they could help me. They referred me on to the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, who wrote a letter to the apartment manager. Subsequently, I was released from that lease with no penalties. I still had to get all my things out of the apartment and move them into a storage unit after just moving them all in there. So I'm very thankful for friends. The bill being proposed would require landlords to disclose their smoking policy, giving renters a fair assessment of life in that particular property. If such a bill had been in place when I was looking, it would have saved me the trouble of moving all my things twice in 3 months. It would have also saved me the anxiety of being subjected to secondhand smoke. This bill is good common sense. When a person makes a hotel reservation, they're generally told by the hotel employee, this is a non-smoking chain of hotels. And for someone like me, I can't tell you what that does for me. I breathe a sigh of relief. And then it astounds me when you go to rent a place you're going to live in for a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years. They don't have to tell you anything. As my story indicates, rental homes are still one of the few places where Oregonians are still involuntarily exposed to secondhand smoke. Please support House Bill 2135 to help renters find housing that is free of secondhand smoke. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gary. Thank you so much for coming to testify today. I'm glad you found a better place to live for yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Now we will hear from Delilah Ortiz, Joe Becker, and Dennis Kilfoyle. Please, when you identify yourself, please just give your name. You don't need to give your address. You do need to do that, I know, when you testify in front of a city council. But here, all you need to do is give your name. Thank you. Hello.
Good morning.
And so, looks like somebody's missing. So, do we have Mel Rader? Guess not. Where's Katie?
She's
you don't need to testify. Okay. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Joe Becker with the Fair Housing Council. Thank you for your time today, Chair Tomei and representatives. I've got two handouts for you, and they should be coming around for you. Again, my name is Joe Becker. I represent the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. Our mission is to eliminate housing discrimination through education and access to enforcement across Oregon and Southwest Washington. As a nonprofit, we promote equal access to housing, specifically related to federal, state, and local fair housing laws. For the past 3 years, we have been under contract with the City of Portland to provide education outreach on behalf of the Bureau of Housing and Community Development on issues related to lead-based paint disclosures, and our effort is to educate landlords about those hazards and their disclosure requirements. The last couple years, we have also been involved with the Smoke-Free Housing Project, educating landlords in a variety of ways as to why it's a good business decision to adopt no smoking rules and the fact that it is not illegal to do so under fair housing law. We also staff a smoke-free housing hotline to help renters seek reasonable accommodation if they have a pre-existing chronic health condition or other disability aggravated by secondhand smoke. I am testifying today on behalf of House Bill 2135, a measure that will require landlords to disclose what their policy is with regard to smoking on the property, if they allow the smoking, where on the property they allow it. It also requires landlords to warn that if smoking is allowed, renters may be exposed to secondhand smoke. I don't have a particular opinion or objection to the amendments that I have heard of this morning. Surveys have found that 70% of Oregonians do not smoke in their home, yet many are living in situations where they're exposed to secondhand smoke from neighboring units or balconies, other outdoor areas. From the conversations we've had with callers to our smoke-free housing hotline, I can tell you these renters are very unhappy, but many are powerless to do anything short of move, which can be burdensome at times. I spoke personally with a lady last fall who had moved to her complex just a short time before, never imagining that she would be bothered by her landlords smoking in the unit directly below her. Others have lived in their units happily for a number of years, only to have a smoker move in next to them, and that suddenly affects them. One hotline call came from a housing authority renter with a disability, as defined by fair housing law. It was escalated to our fair housing enforcement team when we learned that the exposure to secondhand smoke was making the condition worse for her. Our staff advocated on her behalf to convert one building in the complex to a no-smoking environment. Unfortunately, nothing came of the residents' complaints or our efforts. The disclosure that House Bill 2135 requires will help housing consumers screen out and single in on the type of housing situations they prefer, given their personal lifestyle choices, and in some cases, their physical or mental conditions. Disclosure will allow renters to make a more informed decision while looking for a new home and will force landlords to make a statement about their policy to either allow or disallow smoking on the property. In the conversations and classes that we conduct with landlords large and small across the state, an overwhelming majority have embraced the idea of no smoking policies. Given the high market demand for such properties, I would expect many more will follow the trend in the coming months and years. We will continue to educate landlords, large and small, about a myriad of housing-related issues, including the benefits of a smoke-free property. If this bill passes, we will surely be involved in educating landlords and renters about the law as well. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Any quick questions of this witness? All right, thank you. Go ahead.
And good morning, Madam Chair Tomei and members of the Human Services Committee. My name is Dennis Kilfoyle, and I am the Executive Director for Marion County Housing Authority. I'd like to start by giving you a little bit of background on what a housing authority is and who we serve. As most of you are aware, more likely aware, that Marion County is a municipal corporation organized under Statute 456. Our agency's purpose is to administer affordable housing for low-income families residing in Marion County outside the urban growth boundary of Salem-Keizer. Our funding agency is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, also known as HUD. In addition to the HUD programs such as Section 8 vouchers and public housing, MCHA administers farm labor housing programs through the Federal Department of Agriculture, known as rural development, and tax credit projects funded through Oregon Housing and Community Services. The reason I'm here today is to testify in support of House Bill 2135. MCHA has a stake in this important piece of legislation because the tenants we serve will benefit by the intended outcome. The Housing Authority has been serving low-income families, seniors, and farm workers in Marion County for over 40 years. Our organization is keenly aware of the need for such a bill and the consequences of not having clearly identified process for handling smoke issues in residential units. In fact, MCHA has actually experienced a loss of life due to unauthorized smoking in a unit. In this case, the oxygen tank inadvertently caught fire while a senior tenant was smoking and using the device. But this is the worst case and extraordinary circumstance, you know, only offered as an example of other problems that can happen by smoking in a confined space, such as an apartment unit. MCHA has a written no-smoking policy that clearly explains all Marion County Housing Authority properties have been designated as smoke-free living environments and that tenants shall not smoke or permit any guests to smoke anywhere in the units rented by the tenant or in any other common areas. But it's not a simple matter, and circumstances often dictate how our agency responds in each incident. We all know that a common problem is secondhand smoke that can affect other tenants or individuals in near proximity to the smoker. It would be great in a perfect world if we told all tenants that they're not allowed to smoke in the units or common areas, and all tenants agreed and did not violate the policy. The reality is Marion County Housing Authority has a written smoking policy and works diligently to enforce it, but it's not perfect. I'll offer the following example of how MCHA handles violations of smoke-free policy. When a housing authority receives a complaint of a tenant smoking in violation of their lease agreement, as clearly explained in our house rules, the tenant is notified of the complaint in writing by the tenant's case manager. The case manager will follow up and determine if the facts are correct and merit further action, including notice to vacate the unit. Other than the worst-case scenario mentioned above, Marion County has not had to evict any tenants in violation of this policy. However, the agency has owned and operated only open space projects until recently. We are now faced with a new challenge as we develop vertical buildings, such as our recent project called Idlewise Village in Mount Angel. This four-story structure that has commercial retail space on the ground floor also provides three stories of affordable housing for seniors. The new problem that confronts us is when a resident violates the no-smoking policy anywhere on the floor. The smoke is trapped on the floor and never completely filtered by the ventilation. This means the smoke will be more severe than it would be in open space projects and affect a larger number of residents. To mitigate this problem, MCHA has adopted a stronger no-smoking policy with the help of Adele Adams, the Health Education Coordinator for Marion County Health Department. Adele has helped guide us with ensuring that the tenants were briefed on the issues of secondhand smoke and particular relevance in closed spaces, which brings me to my final remarks. House Bill 2135 is particularly important because it requires complete disclosure to the tenants and leaves no room for ambiguity. All tenants are notified in exactly where smoking is permitted, if permitted at all. Marion County Housing Authority believes House Bill 2135 will be conducive to a clear and transparent policy which will benefit both the organizations required to apply the no-smoking laws when applicable and the tenants who will understand their duty to each other and those who may be affected by the unintended consequences of their actions. For these reasons, Marion County Housing Authority encourages this committee to support House Bill 2135, and thank you for providing our agency for this opportunity to testify. And I'm happy to entertain any questions at this time.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Any questions, Representative Van Orman?
Madam Chair, comments by Representative Maurer and Representative Freeman have caused me to wonder about this particular bill. And one of them is it says that the dwelling unit is under ORS Chapter 90. So I'm presuming that under 90, there's a description of what kind of units we're talking about.
So I'm not sure that this person who's testifying can answer that, but we will get an answer.
Okay. And then the second question I have is related to the disclosure policy, that if you have a disclosure policy, you are free then to evict someone if they violate the policy.
Representative Orman, that's correct. What it is called house rules, and it's an attachment to your lease agreement. And if you violate that, you are actually violating your lease agreement. This is a very difficult problem. This is obviously you can legislate and make all the laws in the world, and as you've heard today, it's a difficult thing. I mean, I am such against smoking. I think that nicotine is an addictive substance, and it should be a controlled substance and outlawed. But nonetheless, we deal with seniors, low-income seniors, and families. that have been smoking for years. In the case of seniors, most of our seniors' average age are about 75 to 80. They've been smoking most of their life. It's not an easy task. We have no smoking, and they say they won't smoke, but yet, you know, you're going to find evidence of smoking. Trying to regulate that within our units is very, very difficult. So we have to take it each case at a time, each individual at a time. They're all different circumstances. In this case, most of the time, they'll cooperate and they'll keep their smoke to themselves. Obviously, our no smoking policy, we don't allow it in the units. However, when they move out, obviously we end up cleaning it up. That's part of the issue about whether there's smoke left over. We actually have to go in there and clean the units, and it's expensive. So there's a cost to the smoking. But these folks have been smoking for most of their lives. You're not going to shut them down, and they're not just going to stop smoking overnight. But I can tell you, I think it's decreasing. I think I took a poll from our caseworkers, and I believe approximately 18 to 20% of our residents smoke. I think that has dropped over time. I think the average used to be about 25%. So I think we're making headways, and I think these laws are great. The reason I'm supporting this, I mean, you think, Atlanta, why would you support this legislation? Because I think it's great. I think if you have open rules and it's disclosed and everybody understands what the rules are, then it's just a matter of making sure that you enforce those. But you also have to take the human element into effect, and that's what we do. So I support this legislation. I think it's great. And we will make sure that we give full and absolute disclosure to the letter to our tenants. We do that now. We brief them on our current no-smoking policy, but we're happy to add any language in there that makes it even clearer. Thank you.
Representative Dimbro, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate the real-world perspective that you're giving and the humane manner in which you understand the problem. Obviously, this is a work in progress, but I believe we're moving to a better place as a society. I have a question actually for Ms. Becker, I think, and that's, what we're talking about here are new rental agreements. But I suppose, again, in the real world, it happens that you have units which are facilities which are mixed. You know, some people are smoking, some people are not. There's a decision made to make this no smoking. How does that go? Are the smokers given a sort of notice period, or could you just say something about that,
please? Certainly, and thank you for the question. To be honest, my understanding is that that falls within a landlord's rights under landlord-tenant law in general, ORS 90, Chapter 90. And there are probably other witnesses today that may be a better authority on landlord-tenant law than I am. I do know that based on what the written contract the landlord and the tenant already have in force, the landlord has the right to change the rules. Often in a lease agreement, they need to do that with, say, 30 days' notice. Depends on the language of their lease. We have seen a number of landlords who have adopted no-smoking rules in the last 2-3 years take different approaches. Sometimes they grandfather in the smokers, and once that unit is vacated for whatever reason, then that unit becomes smoke-free like the rest of them. We've seen folks who will allow a notice period, 3 months, 6 months, maybe longer, so that all residents have plenty of time to know that this is a new rule, it's going to go into effect, consider whether they want to continue to live there, et cetera. My understanding that is truly up to the landlord. And the Lung Association, the Smoke Free Housing Project, the Fair Housing Council has counseled landlords that if you're going to take this step to involve residents in the decision, get their feedback, survey them, try to work with them so it's not hammering them over the head with the idea, but really collaborating with the renters. And the support from renters has been high in those instances. May I also, Madam Chair, speak very briefly to the question about ORS 90?
Yes.
I would not be the best expert for this, and I didn't write the bill, but my understanding is that as a former sales agent, ORS 90 covers real estate in general, and rental housing in its entirety is my understanding. And the conversations that I've had with regard to this House bill is that it would cover multifamily, single family, small plexes. It would cover the whole realm of rental housing.
Thank you.
And we will, sure you can, but I just want to state that we will not be having a work session on this, so we'll have plenty of time to get the complete answers back on this issue, but you sure have a follow-up.
Thank you. So, you know, going back to the situation where you have a facility which is in flux, right, where some people are being grandfathered, and would the rental agreement state that? I mean, would the new renter be able to know that, okay, this is a facility that's en route to being smoke-free, but I may still wind up, you know, next door to a smoker?
Certainly, any rental agreement or any amendments to it ought to be in writing. They aren't always, but they certainly ought to be. And so any changes to the rule should be well documented, everyone signing that they're aware of the change. And that's a current day situation. I think that the disclosure bill as it's proposed would make that clear from the get-go for all residents and potential residents to the community.
But would it make clear that they still might, you know, be next to some smokers for a period of time?
I think it certainly should be, but again, it depends on what a particular landlord, their trade association form, or their attorney comes up with as language.
Thank you. I do think that's something we need to think
yes.
about, perhaps.
Thank you. Representative Cowan, you had a question?
I think that probably, thank you, Madam Chair, most of my questions are going to need to go a different direction, but maybe just one quick one. Because the Fair Housing Council may have had some concerns voiced to it. I'm assuming at this point in time that a prospective renter, or if I were a prospective renter, I would ask a potential landlord if smoking were allowed in this facility. And I'm assuming that that person should answer my question. Do you get complaints, though, that people may have asked that question and not been given a full disclosure answer?
To be honest, I'm not personally aware that situation has happened. I think with the witness that you heard in the seat previously, the renter, probably didn't occur to her. She probably toured the unit that was available, was in the manager's office, looked around the property, and didn't see smoke.
Certainly.
It didn't occur to her at that time, I'm assuming. And I think that's what often happens. And so the idea behind this bill is simply to put it top of mind along with a number of other disclosures and items for a renter to consider.
I understand, and I want to make it perfectly clear that I wasn't suggesting everyone has that responsibility. I was just curious if you'd had any complaints about people who had asked and then not got an honest answer. That I didn't want to make it sound like it was any more than that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the question. I don't believe that we have gotten that.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think that Delilah, is that correct? Ortiz is here. And I'm assuming Mel Rader is not here. Is that correct? Okay. Delilah, please come up. And if you'd just tell us your name for the record, that would be great. We're so glad you came.
Thank you. I've mistakenly been in the other room, so. Okay. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dalila Ortiz, and I'm with Farmworker Housing Development Corporation in Woodburn. FHDC was established in 1990 with the purpose of providing or developing low-income housing for farm workers. FHDC has now 200 units from its three properties in Woodburn, Salem, and Independence. One of our properties, Nuevo Amanecer, has recently implemented a smoke-free policy on which tenants' input was very important. I would like to tell you the story about how our smoke-free policy came to be. The youth at Nuevo Amanecer were a really important part of making this policy happen. The youth researched the facts, conducted some interviews and surveyed the tenants about their feelings about secondhand smoke. The tenants overwhelmingly supported the creation of the smoke-free policy at Nuevo Amanecer. 92% of them wanted a smoke-free policy. The tenants reported that the smell of tobacco in their home bothered them. The youth created a presentation and gave it at the Resin Association meeting, and we passed the non-smoking rule. For now, all of our tenants signed an agreement form that we have placed in their files temporarily, and now a class has been added to the lease. We're proud we could offer housing that is free from secondhand smoke to all of residents. This creates a safer environment, especially for those families with children or elderly who suffer from asthma. Having a smoke-free policy and property and informing residents about our policy makes them aware of the second of the effects of the secondhand smoke and how FHTC helps to keep their families protected. We think House Bill 2135 is good for many reasons. Tenants across Oregon deserve to know whether they may be exposed to secondhand smoke before they enter a rental agreement. Being told whether or not smoking is allowed would help tenants make an important decision about where they choose to live. Disclosing the rule up front is also good for property management because it helps us make sure tenants understand and follow the rule. Telling tenants about rules is normal, everyday thing that property management do, and we think this bill will make things easier for property management, not harder. We encourage you to support House Bill 2135. Thank you very much. I may take any questions, too.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Thank you so much for coming.
It's not a question, just a comment. I just want to say we've had several examples of what's already happening, and it sounds like this might help what you're already doing.
Thank you. Okay, and I think this may be the last person who has signed up is Sean Miller. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this legislation? Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Rental Housing Association, which represents nearly 5,000 landlords in the state of Oregon, and Metro Multifamily Housing, which represents about 150,000 rental units in the state of Oregon. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2135. There's been a lot of discussions within the landlord groups and Department of Human Services, as well as the advocates for the bill. And in that discussion, we have agreed to draft an amendment. I'll talk about the amendment, then I'll try to answer some of the questions that have been asked, that specifically in lines 11 of the bill, section 1, sub 2, just deletes the last sentence. And so in section 1, sub 2, just deletes the last sentence, and all that does is it preserves the intent of the disclosure, which landlords feels are important, as well as residents. And you heard from essentially the tenant side and the advocate side, but what you really haven't heard is some of the liability issues that you know. Obviously, we are responsible for every word that goes into that rental agreement. And, you know, we want to protect, the landlords want to protect themselves from liability, you know, even if a tenant is violating, let's say, a no smoking policy and there's a fire in the unit, there's issues that can come up there, which I think helps the landlord to have this particular bill passed, as well as just having people actually violate some of the policies where we are able then to actually evict someone who may be violating some of these policies. So I think it clears it up. And for our standpoint, we like, just from the landlord and the tenant responsibility, to understand exactly what everybody's responsibilities in that agreement are. And this bill provides that. In section 1, sub 2, it gets into more of the health issues of secondhand smoke. And you know, we're obviously not here to debate any of the health issues. I think the Department of Human Services and the advocates behind me do a very good job of talking about the effects of secondhand smoke. But having that requirement in the agreement and having the landlord actually talk about that when they may not be qualified to properly do that we didn't feel was appropriate. Now, we had that discussion with DHS, and they agreed that they're willing to accept just taking that last sentence out.
Help me understand, yeah. Sean, why, I mean, that doesn't say that you're going to be harmed, a person will be harmed if they consume secondhand smoke. All it says is, I'll quote, if smoking is allowed on the entire premises or in limited area on the premises, the disclosure shall include a warning to the tenant that the tenant may be exposed to secondhand smoke while on the premises. But it doesn't say they're going to die or even be harmed by that. It just says that they may be exposed, correct?
Yeah, it does, and again, it adds another thing that the that would be in the rental agreement that I think, again, the intent of this bill is to allow people to make the choice and understand what they're getting into. We just didn't feel that the that this was needed in the actual agreement itself.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Cowan.
Thank you very much for raising that. That is exactly the question that I'm struggling with, and I think the reference to getting into the health impacts of whether secondhand smoke exposure is good or bad, and that's in the public health realm and that sort of thing, that there's nothing in this line that addresses whether it's good or bad if you're exposed to secondhand smoke. It simply says that included in this conversation that you need to let your tenant know that in accordance with our policy, I mean, there is a possibility that that smoke can get around and you could be exposed. Am I reading that correctly?
Madam Chair.
I'm going to wait and let him answer that.
No, I think you are reading that correctly. I just don't think that...
All right.
I mean, I think you are reading that correctly.
I understand that you may not, that you may want to take that out. I just want to be real clear about what it is or isn't that we're taking out.
Yes.
Thank you.
And there was a question over here. Representative Bannerman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei.
And I'm going to say again, if you have any kind of electronic device on, somebody does, please check your electronic devices
because that's causing, you can hear that.
So it cannot be just on mute. It has to be completely off. So please check your electronic devices now, because this is a record of this meeting, and it is kept forever and ever, and it needs to be clear. So please, if you have anything on, please turn it completely off.
I normally don't sound like that.
No, you don't, Sean. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. I think I understand what they're talking about, because for me what it says is that I am admitting to you that I have a danger on my property, and I'm thinking that if you're going to be sued, you've already said my property has a danger to it, and I think that you're opening yourself really to liability with that statement.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, that's exactly, I think, the concern. And I think just from a liability standpoint, not only in protecting us but exposing us, I think that line, just deleting that line, clears it up. And I think it gets to the original intent of the bill. I do want to talk about real briefly the second small amendment to the that we would need in this bill, and that's to exempt manufactured parks, which is, just to answer some of the questions I think that Representative Maurer and Representative Van Orman, Representative Freeman asked, is that Chapter 90 pertains to any rental agreement, essentially. And so it could be the 30-unit apartment building or the one single home that someone rents. Our landlord association that I represent encourages everybody to have the proper forms, the updated forms, and obviously we encourage to have a smoking policy in the form, in the lease, whether it's a 30-day month-to-month or a year or two-year lease or however you want to do it. In the manufactured park instance, which is Chapter 105, slightly different scenario, because they're a resident of a park. They actually own their unit. And so it's like owning your own home. You own that unit. It's not an instance where you're in an apartment building where you may or may not have the choice. You completely have the choice of what you may want to do in that unit. And so that's been a discussion we've had with the Department of Human Services, and they've agreed to that amendment. So those would be the only two items that we would propose working with the committee, and then we would hope that the committee would adopt those amendments and move the bill to the floor. You know, just from a personal experience, I do own a house rental property here in Salem, rent to four college students, Willamette College students, and I have a no-smoking policy, quite honestly, because I don't want the smell, the liability, and just the issues that are associated with that. I think one of the questions that Representative Dembro asked was, you know, whether in those policies, how they correlate with some of the other policies of how far you would have to smoke. I mean, for the most part, a landlord's going to say the entire premises. And that's in my case. If someone does want to smoke, they would have to actually leave the premises to smoke, and that's my particular policy, and I think that more and more landlords are actually adopting that policy, but this bill actually, I think, clears it up, again, the liability for both sides, and I think is an important piece of legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir. Representative Boone.
I did have a question, and then Sean actually ticked me up to another one. But so, since I can only remember the last thing, most recently, and it's just maybe just a clarification. You mentioned ORS 105, which is the parks under this. And my question is, I guess clarification: doesn't this just address Chapter 90?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, it does, but in rental agreements, there is some things within 105 that actually, Chapter 90 encompasses a lot of things in 105, so they kind of mix together, and so it's not really explicit, and the legislative folks that work on the landlord-tenant coalition, which is the landlord and the tenant advocates, suggested that would need to be in here, because I think since there is maybe a resident agreement, it could be confused that you may have to have that in there. And it's really not needed in that environment.
Okay. And a follow-up. I remembered. Is this one of the two amendments that we don't have in front of us, but that everybody has already signed off on?
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, yes. And it actually be one amendment with just the two items dealing with manufactured parks and just the deletion of the one sentence. And so, you know, our intent would be to work with the committee, bring back one amendment for you to consider, and then, hopefully move the amendment and the bill.
Any other questions? Thanks so much, Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else who wants to testify? Marky, did you want to? Okay. Anyone else who wants to testify on this bill? And I think, advocates, you know, you've heard the questions up here, and if those questions could be answered and those issues clarified, somebody still has to. Electronics on. Okay.
Not me.
I didn't bring mine.
Get a little scanner.
Didn't bring mine.
I didn't bring it.
Right. Yeah, we're going to have a scanner when you come in. So, obviously, we have several conversations going on here. Representative, is there anything you want to tell us here? Representative Maurer, anything you want to tell us?
Are being recorded?
No.
I want to let you know you're being recorded, so whatever you're saying is going to be
on the record.
On the record.
Madam Chair, I was just mentoring.
Good catch. Very good. Okay. Unless there's anything more, any other questions or clarifications?
Madam Chair, yes, Representative. Any political questions in this political body, and I'll just sit here and be quiet.
Good. Oh, that's the best news I've had all day. Thank you. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2135 and open up an informational hearing. Is that better? On House Bill 2136. Thank you all for coming to testify on this. Did a good job. Okay. 2136. So who do we have up for this? So we have Dr. Hedberg again, if she's still here. Great. Colleen Herman-Franzen.
No.
Here we go. Jim Beecraft and Mo Spencer. And if there's anyone else who wants to testify on this, oh, no, this is just invited testimony. Sorry. Thank you for staying. Okay.
Oh, and you want to read this, the bill, please?
This bill prohibits distribution of tobacco products from vending machines and basically corrects language throughout the Oregon statutes that pertains to vending machines, whether through deletion or repealing statutes on vending machine regulation.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Hedberg.
Good morning. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg, the interim state epidemiologist in the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 2136, which prohibits the sale of tobacco products through vending machines. This bill was introduced on our behalf by the governor. Tobacco use is the number one preventable cause of death in Oregon. In 2005, almost 7,000 Oregonians, or 22% of all deaths, were attributable to tobacco. Tobacco-related chronic diseases cost Oregon over $1.1 billion per year in lost wages and productivity, and cost over $1 billion in direct medical expenditures. In 2005, 10% of Oregon 8th graders reported smoking in the last 30 days. The highest rates were among girls at 11.3%, Native Americans at 17.5%, and African Americans at 14.8%. 7% of the Oregon 8th graders who smoke report purchasing cigarettes from vending machines. Every day, 48 children in Oregon smoke their first cigarette. A year later, 20 of those children will still be smoking, and of those, 1 in 3 will die prematurely due to tobacco-related causes. 90% of current adult smokers started smoking before they turned 18 years. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Institute of Medicine have concluded that restricting youth and adult access to tobacco is a critical deterrent to smoking. Prohibiting sale of tobacco products in vending machines through the passage of House Bill 2136 supports this by decreasing youth and adult access to tobacco products. This, in turn, will reduce the number of smokers and reduce the burden of tobacco-related chronic diseases in Oregon. In addition, House Bill 2136 will ensure consistency among Oregon statutes designed to limit youth access to tobacco. Oregon law currently requires vendor assistance for all tobacco sales in retail stores. However, many vending machines selling tobacco products are not located in stores, but rather in places like hotel lobbies where children or youth may have access. Because purchases of tobacco from vending machines do not require age verification, youth have easy access to tobacco products, which increases the likelihood of smoking. In summary, the Public Health Division strongly supports passage of House Bill 2136, prohibiting sale of tobacco products from vending machines in Oregon. I offer myself to committee members as a resource for information and technical assistance on tobacco use and prevention. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions of this witness? Thank you. Who is next?
That's me. Good morning, Chair Tomei. Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Mo Spencer. I'm an attorney, and I'm also State Director of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, which is the lobbying wing of the American Cancer Society. I'm here today to support the passage of House Bill 2136, which prohibits the sale of tobacco products through vending machines. Picture, if you will, a young child, perhaps 16 years old, on vacation with their parents in a hotel, unsupervised, there's a vending machine that teenager can put money in and get cigarettes out of that vending machine. There's no policing there. And I think that's problematic in terms of a vending machine and being accessible to youngsters. As we heard in previous testimony, in 2005, there was a survey done where 10% of 8th graders in Oregon reported smoking within a time frame of the last 30 days. And among these, 7% reported purchasing cigarettes from a vending machine. Now, nearly all adult smokers begin smoking before turning 18 years old. 22% of all Oregonian deaths are attributed to tobacco. 57% of cancer deaths in Oregon are linked to tobacco use. In addition, lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in Oregon. Because purchases from tobacco vending machines do not require age verification, youth, as I mentioned, have easy access to tobacco products. Current laws allow children and youth access to tobacco vending machines, most notably in hotel lobbies, but also in manufacturing plants. If House Bill 2136 is not approved, youth and minors will continue to have this easy access to cigarettes and other tobacco products, which will increase their likelihood of smoking and then later on becoming smokers. And we will continue to see tobacco-related cancers as an important cause of death in Oregon, which it already is. So by prohibiting the sale of tobacco products from vending machines in Oregon, we will decrease, essentially, the access to tobacco products among youth, children specifically, and adults. And this, in turn, will reduce the number of smokers and reduce the burden of cancer and tobacco-related chronic diseases in Oregon. So for those reasons, Chair Tomei and Vice Chair Olson and members of the committee, I do encourage you to pass this important piece of legislation to protect youth, essentially, in Oregon from the deadly effects of tobacco. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this? Representative Maurer, you look.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so this applies to both cigarettes and OTP, other tobacco products?
In the vending machines, and mostly in the vending machines, you have cigarettes. But if there are vending machines with other products, then this would apply. Okay. So all vending machines with tobacco products.
Representative Freeman? No,
My other brother, Freeman. Thank you, Chair Tomei. Just a curiosity question, because I've heard this a number of times this past week, and I'm just curious how youth 18 or under have access to vending machines in manufacturing plants. How do we know that? How do they get access? The hotel lobby I can buy into, but the manufacturing plant I struggle with. I mean, most of them are fairly secure, and you can't get past the front gate.
Do you want to take a stab? And I'll take a stab after.
Yeah. Oh. Go ahead. Chair Tomei and Representative Huffman, my understanding is that some 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds may be working in these plants in terms of summer jobs or internships or whatever. So it may be, in a sense, a place of employment for some, albeit not very many, but that's how they would have access to it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. I think when you have people who have the ability to work in manufacturing plants with a lot of people. I certainly did when I was before the age of 18, albeit in another state. So I think that's probably the problematic issue here that we're facing.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It appears that the proposals in this bill then are simply a across-the-board ban on the sale of cigarettes or other tobacco products in all vending machines. Is there or has there been any consideration of an exception for vending machines that are located in places where youth are not allowed to be, such as over 21 bars?
If I can speak on that, I think the problem with vending machines, the first problem, is the problematic issues of youngsters having access to it, bar none. That's a problem. I think the other problem is in as a representative of the Cancer Society and looking out for trying to reduce the risk of cancer. If I'm posed with the task of doing that, I'm also going to look at reducing smoking in general. And so for me, when you're looking at places where you have adult businesses where you'll have vending machines there, for me it's still a problematic issue, and for the Cancer Society it's still a problematic issue with those who have who are going to be smoking or having access to cigarettes to continue smoking in a place even though they're adults, to be able to reduce reduce the cause of smoking and smokers, essentially. That's what I'm looking at. And so for me, it's still problematic, even when it's in a place of an adult business. I think on the face of it, it's an adult place. Why shouldn't it be there? I think there's a valid argument, but in terms of the Cancer Society, we're looking at reducing smokers in general, and I think that's the issue that faces us, and that's a problem for us as well.
I hear what you're saying. They may be two different issues.
I'm going to follow up on that, if I may, Representative Cowan. So I'm assuming if there is a vending machine inside a bar, if an older-looking teenager goes in, in fact, I think I did this.
Wow. Thank you, Chair Tomei. Thank you.
Yes. And if I probably didn't order alcohol because I would have had to show my ID, but I would go into a bar and go to the vending machine and get cigarettes because nobody asked to see my ID. I did not look 21. I didn't even probably look 18. But I was able to get cigarettes. So I'm assuming, I mean, that was a long time ago, I'm assuming that still happens. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. Okay. I think it's very likely it happens.
Thank
Madam
you.
Madam Chair, why would a bar have a vending machine? Because they can't smoke in a bar anyway.
Well, now.
You'd have to ask them.
And they could sell it behind the counter, which right. Some bars do. So I don't, even the manufacturing plant. You know, maybe they ought to get in the business of selling cigarettes.
good point. It's not allowed in any workplace.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Some other people had questions. Representative Van Orman, did anybody?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to know, how many machines are we really talking about in the state of Oregon?
It looks like we don't have an answer here, but we will get one. Thank you. Good question. I'm through. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
That was my question.
Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand where Representative Cowan's going with this, and to me, what I've heard from both Lowe and Dr. Hedberg until the question was asked here from Representative Cowan is, and I got to be truthful with you, I have a little bit of concern with this bill to the point with if we're focusing specifically for accessibility for children, well, a minor's not supposed to be in a tavern. Period. We have a law that prohibits that.
So is there a question coming out of this?
No. No. Been in a few taverns.
I'm shocked. Let's see. Who else did I not call on? Anyone? All right. Thank you.
Chair, could I just make one comment about it as well? So Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I think it's exactly as my colleague mentioned. The thrust of this decreasing tobacco in or sales from vending machines, a primary goal can be decreasing youth access. But in general, access for everyone around tobacco products is, you know, it's clear we want to decrease the amount of tobacco use because of the huge public health burden of that. So I think that, if you will, that's a secondary benefit to limiting vending machines is making the access to tobacco products a little more difficult.
Okay, thank you. Keely, you wanted to read something for us?
I just was, in response to Representative Maurer, the statute referenced basically does cover all tobacco, starting with something I can't pronounce, I'm sorry, cigars, cheroots, any kind of rubbed and smoking tobacco, fine cut and chewing tobaccos, any forms of tobacco prepared in a manner to be suitable for chewing or smoking.
Does it include crimp leaves?
Yeah,
I'm sure
okay.
It does.
It does. I don't know what crimp is.
Neither do I. But
we have far too much fun in here. Okay, sir, could you please let us know who you are, and then you can give your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is, and representatives, my name is James R. Beecraft, and I'm from Tillamook County. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I am James R. Beecraft, Tobacco Prevention and Education Coordinator with Tillamook County Health Department. I'm here today to support the passage of House Bill 2136, which prohibits the sale of tobacco products through vending machines. I support House Bill 2136 because tobacco product vending machines contribute to early initiation of smoking by allowing children and youth easy access to cigarettes. Because 90% of adult smokers start smoking before the age of 18 years, preventing this early addiction is a globally recognized best practice to prevent the long-term personal and public health consequences of tobacco use. Incidentally, I recently read that worldwide 25% of all smokers begin before the age of 10. According to the Tillamook County Tobacco Fact Sheet 2009, approximately 6% of 8th graders smoke and approximately 14% of 11th graders smoke. In addition, by the 11th grade, 11% of male teens are using smokeless tobacco. Each year, we Tillamook County citizens spend $12 million on medical care for tobacco-related illnesses. In addition, as a community, we lose over $13 million per year in productivity due to tobacco-related deaths. Our Tillamook County Community Health Council places a high priority on supporting actions that prevent the initiation of tobacco use by children and youth, such as House Bill 2136 provides. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, I encourage you to protect Oregonians, particularly Oregon youth, by passing this important piece of legislation.
Thank you for coming such a long way to tell us your story this morning. We really appreciate it. And a tough morning to be driving in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Boone.
More of a welcome to one of my constituents. Thanks for coming over. Mr. Beecraft has done a lot of work in this area, and he's tireless. I hear from him often, and I appreciate it. And he's also working for us releasing more tobacco prevention settlement for tobacco settlement money for prevention.
Great.
Use.
Good.
Thank you.
As of which there is none right now, so a little plug.
Thank you. Mr. Kraft, the information that you referred to for the 25% worldwide, did it also kind of capture different parts of the world, too, that seemed to be really out front for that?
I would like to recommend two publications that you read to gain a worldwide view of tobacco. I would like for you to go to the World Health Organization site, and I would like for you to read the Empower report, which is about 60 pages. It puts the whole global epidemic in perspective. 1 billion people may die in the 21st century because of tobacco. And this is a major paper of WHO saying how we can deal with it worldwide, and youth initiation is a critical area of it. And then there is another report there that deals with secondhand smoke that's about 60 pages, and I believe that that's where I got the 25%. It is very tightly written, very carefully written, and if you look at this issue from WHO through the National Academies of Science, Institute of Medicine, CDC, right to our wonderful state health division and our other state public health people, we are working on this issue and as strongly as we can with sometimes limited resources. CDC's made recommendations as to state funding, as to how much should come into it at the state level. And critical in dealing with this is dealing with youth initiation, secondhand smoking, and the vending machine ties in very, very much. But as Mo said, the issue is not just youth access, but in some ways it's helping shift the norms and attitudes of the world community to deal with tobacco. And one more plug, the United States has signed a framework convention on tobacco. It has not at this point been ratified. The people in the state of Oregon may want to deal with that and make sure that the United States participates in the global community to deal with issues of secondhand smoke and youth initiation.
Yeah.
Thank you. Further questions? Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much for coming today, all of you, and the people in the audience. Thank you for participating in these hearings. I think I'm going to close. Is there anyone? No. The information was invited testimony only, so I'm not going to ask that question. So I'm going to close the informational hearing on House Bill 2136. Any information for the good of the order here. I will remind you that Monday's meeting will be at 8:30 in the morning, not at 8. And if I could have my two vice chairs stay for a few minutes, I would appreciate it. All right, thank you, and I'll close the House Committee on Human Services.